I mean, you're just contagious. I forgot to turn my microphone on. Good morning, church. Man, I'll tell you what, if we didn't do stuff wrong, we wouldn't do stuff at all sometimes. It's just, it's the way it is. It's the way we are. I am thankful for you and for your patience and for your presence. Certainly our time together of worship this morning has been encouraging, and so appreciate all that Tommy does to make it such a powerful experience, such a powerful part of the life of the church here at Forest Mill. I know we are fortunate to have some family in. I see some others of you have gotten that as well. Some of them are even here this morning. We are thankful if you are visiting with us, and want you to know that you are always welcome back. And if you are just your regular old Forest Mill person, man, we're thankful for you too. Really glad to have you with us this morning as well. Hope that you had a good Thanksgiving, enjoyed some time with family and friends and loved ones, and got to eat some good food. I know for our family at least, we mostly fast. But I don't know what your family does, but we did all right. We did all right, and certainly had a good time of gathering together. I heard a story this week about an older guy who loved playing golf. Now, I don't love to play golf, but I appreciate a good golf story. And this guy was almost 80, and his vision was not that good anymore. And so he always had some partners. His friends would go out with him, and they could tell him where he hit his ball. You know, he pretty good striker, but he didn't always know where it was going, couldn't see it. So they went with him. They just spot it for him. Well, one day he's sitting in the clubhouse. His buddies didn't show up for this just a beautiful day of golf. And he waited and he waited. And the more he waited, the more agitated and upset he got because he wasn't going to get to play his round of golf. And this other elderly gentleman is in the clubhouse. And he saw him and he knew that he was normally out there playing. So he asked him what was wrong. He said, well, I was really looking forward to playing a beautiful game of golf today. But I don't see so well anymore. And so I needed someone to watch the ball for me. The second man was even older than he was, but he said, well, that's no problem. I'll be glad to ride around with you. I can't hit anymore, but I've got 20/20 vision. I've got eyes like a hawk. I mean, I can watch you hit the ball, and I'll know exactly where it goes. So took him up on the offer. They go to the first tee. Old man hit a ball just right down the fairway. Beautiful, beautiful shot. And he turned to his spotter, the older gentleman. He said, well, did you see where it went? Older man said, yes, sir. I watched it all the way till it stopped rolling. Well, where did it go? And the older man paused for a second, and he said, where did what go? even the best laid plans don't always work out, do they? That's the reality that we face every day, isn't it, Tommy? We work and we think we've got everything all in a row, but you're just never sure how things are going to turn out. So how do we live life with risk? How do we live life with uncertainty? Well, that's what the writer of Ecclesiastes, he calls himself Koheleth, or just the preacher. He tackles this question really throughout much of the book of Ecclesiastes. He tries to change our perspective. See, we're humans, we're fallible, we live in a mortal world, and we have a few different perspectives. We look at life from the perspective of a person aging, right? We start at this age and we get older or smarter or weaker or whatever it is that happens to us as we age. We watch that, or maybe we watch it from the standpoint of financial success. I started with this much money and I end up with that much money, or maybe we look at it as from a standpoint of prestige or relationships, that we have this very human perspective. And what the writer of Ecclesiastes is trying to get us to do is to take a perspective that's very uncomfortable to us. He tries to take us to a perspective of death. And that's not normally one we like to look at. Have you ever been like way, way up high in a skyscraper? Maybe one in Chicago or New York City or one of the major cities of the world, and you get way up there and you look down at the people who are scurrying around. They're just like ants. I mean, just tiny. Or you go up in a plane and you look out from your plane and you can see all those, you know, hundreds of acres of field, and it just looks like a quilt out there. And you're like, somebody worked for days on that one little square right there. Or maybe you've been to the top of a mountain and you look out across a landscape and you can see a city. Just the entire city sort of laid out in front of you, and everybody looks small. That's essentially what he's doing, only he's taking us even up higher than that. He's taking us to the perspective of God, who looks down on mankind, and we are just like the little ants. We are worrying and running and scurrying, and we have no idea that just over the hill lies a threat or a danger or a possibility or a hope. We have no idea because we're down so low, we can see so little, because we're merely human. He's trying to tell us we don't know what's going on. So take a step back. Take a step back and view life from the perspective of God with death in mind. Not normally a perspective we're comfortable with. So the writer of Ecclesiastes, particularly in here in chapter 11, asks us, how do we live with that risk, with that possibility, not knowing what's coming next, right? So whether you're a person, some of you are more inclined to be people who are play it safe in your investments, in your relationships, in your life choices. We want to play it safe. Some others of us are big risk takers, and life is up and down and up and down because we're always willing to take the risks. But regardless of which kind of person you are, this advice is for all of us. And he says, beginning in chapter 11, verse 1, he says, cast your bread upon the waters. Cast your bread upon the waters. Hang on to that phrase. We're going to come back to it in just a moment. He says, after many days, you may receive a return. Invest in 7 ventures. Yes, in 8. You do not know what disaster may come upon the land. I was talking with the elders this morning. We're discussing this morning's sermon and really the study through the book of Ecclesiastes. And I said, you know, if I didn't have other people to help me go through this, this entire book is just pretty disconcerting. It leaves you feeling afloat, abandoned, like there's no purpose, no meaning in life. And that's what he does here again. He's like, yeah, go do some stuff because you never know what's going to happen. Cast your bread upon the waters. It sounds like strange advice, doesn't it? I mean, have you ever thrown bread in water? When I was a kid, my mom occasionally would take us out to the park. We had a park in the city, and it had these ducks and sometimes geese who would be out there, and we could take stale bread, like bread that we would no longer eat anymore. The ducks were happy to have it. And so we'd take it down there, and you throw it out, and sometimes you throw it out, and they'd miss a piece here and there, and it hit the water. Well, what happens to the bread when it hits the water? Do you ever get that bread back? No, it's gone. Maybe the fish will come up and get it. Maybe it just sinks to the bottom, gets covered in mud. Who knows what happens once it gets down in the water, right? But that's what he says. Cast your bread upon the waters and maybe it'll come back to you. Well, what's he talking about there? Because if you throw pieces of bread in the water, I'm just 99% sure you're never getting that bread back, right? Well, there are a few different interpretations of what he's talking about here. One interpretation is that the preacher's encouraging us to be generous to the poor. In other words, cast your bread upon the waters is sharing with someone in need, literally sharing your bread with people in need. The point is that if you help others when they are in need, then when you are in need, they'll help you. Cast your bread upon the waters and it'll come back to you. You have plenty of bread now, you share with other people. Maybe one day you don't have enough bread, they'll share bread with you. That's one interpretation. Or maybe he's talking about sowing seed, casting your, because bread could also be grain, right? So sowing your grain like in a floodplain. Where I lived, I grew up near the Red River, the river that divides Texas from Oklahoma there. And just beyond our house, the land dropped off sharply into a big flat floodplain. It was a great area for farmers. That was a great place to raise crops. Well, the same was true in the ancient Near East, especially when you think about the Nile River, right? The Nile would rise up, and then it would recede. And what he's saying is that the best time for sowing seed is when that water starts receding, but it's not gone yet. Like you go out, and there's still water on the land, and so you cast your grain upon the waters, and as those waters recede, it just takes that that seed right down into this really loamy soil. It is literally the best time to plant your grain. That's when you're going to get the best harvest. Now, there's some uncertainty. What if, you know, another rain happens somewhere upriver and the rivers rise again? It could carry your grain off. There's some risk involved. But maybe what he's saying is, go ahead and just cast your grain upon the waters. That's how you get the best crop. And both of those interpretations have some merit. But it seems to me that the most likely interpretation is that he's talking about engaging in trade. In other words, he's urging them to think about putting their grain or their wheat or their bread or whatever it is they've raised, whatever it is they produce, put it on a ship and send it off. And then maybe it'll trade down the river or across the sea and you'll get a big return. Right? Maybe you had a good crop this year, and so there's lots of people around you who had good crops, and so your grain is not worth as much. But you send it down the river or you send it across the sea, and maybe they had a drought this year, and all of a sudden your grain is very valuable to them. So go ahead and send it out for a trade, and maybe you'll get more in return. You sell your goods for more. So find it after many days is the reward of taking that risk with an investment. We say sometimes nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? And what the writer of Ecclesiastes is saying is literally just take action. Do something. He encourages multiple actions. He says, yeah, invest in 7 things. No, invest in 8 things. You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Do all sorts of things. The point is that you never know what's going to happen next. If you came into a large sum of money at one point and you sank it into the stock market and then all of a sudden the stock market might crash because you don't know. Or maybe you see a great deal on a piece of land and you think this is going to be fantastic. And so you buy a piece of property and you think you'll hold it for a few years and you'll sell it. And then all of a sudden it gets seized by eminent domain. Right? You don't know what's going to happen. So go ahead and he says, do lots of different things. Our world is uncertain at every turn. Should you go to college or should you go to graduate school to pursue your career? Or what if the job market for what you're studying, what if the job market just suddenly dries up? Because that could happen. You know, should you have kids? Well, what if there are health complications? Should you buy a house? What if you're in the process of buying a house and you buy the house and then you lose your job? Or, you know, who knows? There's just so many ifs out there. There's always good reasons to stand still and do nothing. Isn't there, church? There is always a good reason to not do something. And that's what he's talking about. He keeps going on. He says, if clouds are full of water, they pour rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. And again, this sounds a little mystical or even confusing to us, but what he's really saying is, if you are looking for signs to do nothing, you are always going to find them. If you are looking for signs to do nothing, there's always going to be a good reason. Looks like it might rain today. Better not go out and do planting. Or it looks like the wind's blowing and it blew down a tree up in the north pasture, so we better not harvest today because it'll blow the grain away as we're harvesting. So they're just not going to harvest it all either. And most of us are not farmers. You may have a garden or a plot, but most of us are certainly not commercial farmers the way he's talking about people who did it for a living. But we understand the idea. Maybe you're overdue for a raise and you need to talk to your boss. Looks like he's not in a great mood today. Right? Or maybe you need to buy a car, but oh man, did you see that the car prices just went up because the price of computer chips has skyrocketed, and so the price of cars has gone up. Maybe we just ought to wait until car prices come back down. On a more practical basis, I need to fill up with gas, but it went up 10 cents last night. If I drive it 2 more days, it might come back down. Anybody ever played that little game? That is a losing proposition, is it not? Right? There's a risk involved, and we think, oh boy, I just don't want to take that chance. And I don't think he's advocating that we just run around willy-nilly and do whatever we want to do regardless of the circumstances. I don't think he's saying don't use wisdom, don't use discretion, but if your wisdom and your discretion are perpetually preventing you from acting, maybe it's time to take somebody else's wisdom and advice. If your wisdom and your perspective are keeping you standing still, it's time to listen to someone else. The preacher, he looks out at the world through the eyes of a realist, right? We may not always like what he says, but he says it like it is. And he knows when you look out at the world, no matter who you are, no matter where you are in life, that you and I are in control of very little. Very little. You and I, if we were in the farming business, we'd be really well aware of this, that we have zero control over the wind and the weather, right? If you are in the investing market, you know that you have zero control over the financial market. Have zero control over land values in your area. Have zero control over the price of gas at the pump. In fact, I even have very little control over my own health. I'm sure there are some things I can do in all of those circumstances, but I'm not in control. So if you and I, if we are sitting and waiting for the perfect storm of circumstances when everything's going to just materialize and everything's going to be just right, if that's what you're waiting for, we will never get anything done. Sometimes you just got to plant in the rain. Sometimes you just got to harvest in the wind and hope that it works out. Otherwise, you are going to be missing out on life's opportunities. Pursue the dream that you believe God has given you for a calling in your life, even though the time is not right. Get actively involved in ministry, even though things are not all perfect. Show mercy to someone who is in need. Show forgiveness to someone with whom you've had conflict, even though the time is bad or they're not gracious or they're not accepting. Whatever it is, just go ahead and do it. Start a friendship with a neighbor, even though they pile junk in their yard and they sneer at you across the fence. Just do it. Don't use the excuse that you are too busy or too tired or too young or too old or that you are don't know enough. Oh, well, that's the one we get real caught up in. I don't know enough to do ministry. I don't know how to do this particular thing. I don't know if I can do this particular thing. Don't use the excuse that you don't have the spiritual gifts to get involved in kingdom ministry, because you are exactly, you specifically, are exactly where God has placed you perfectly to be the light to someone in a dark world. You are perfectly placed by God right where you are, in school, retired, good health, bad health, stay-at-home mom, traveling dad. It does not matter who you are or where you are. God has placed you perfectly to be the light in the dark world to someone. You are perfectly situated to point someone to a risen Christ. God has put you there. He continues on. He says in verse 5, as you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. I mean, we're pretty smart people. Maybe not you and I specifically, but there are people out there who are smart, right? I had a degree in accounting, and I could have told you something about economics or money stuff at some point in my life. That is long gone. But there are people who really know that stuff who could explain exactly how the financial markets work. There are medical people who can tell you exactly what is going on with the formation of a baby in the womb, right? There was a time, at this time, this is written in an ancient world, they didn't have 3D imaging for babies in the womb. So they just know that, somebody gets pregnant and then all of a sudden there's a baby in there and then out comes a baby. And sometimes everything's great with the baby and sometimes not everything's not great with the baby. But we don't know, there's just a baby going on in there. And that's what he kind of says, is you don't know how it's being formed in there. Well, nowadays we've got all this amazing technology and we can see exactly when the brainstem forms, and exactly when the heart and the lungs form, and exactly when the little arms and legs, and when it starts to move, we can see all that stuff. We can watch a baby's formation from conception to birth, right? It's absolutely amazing. But you know what? We still don't know everything. We're not even close to knowing everything. Have you ever gone to the doctor and explained to them what's going on? Like, look, every day I get up and my back makes this funny noise, and then the microwave goes off. I don't know what's happening. And you've got all these symptoms of what's going on in your body, and you explain it to the doctor. You tell them, this is exactly the symptoms I am experiencing. The doctor says, huh, we're going to have to do some tests. And maybe they do, like, the right tests. They do one or two or five, whatever. And then you're like, okay, you got the results of these tests. What's going on? They're like, well, we're just not real sure. I mean, we are an advanced people with advanced scientific medical testing. And doctors can have all of the best things at their fingertips. You can go not just to the doctor in Manchester. Maybe you go to just this expert in Nashville, and they're like, I don't know, you're going to have to go to the Mayo Clinic. Or, I don't know, you're going to have to go to this specialist overseas. And they can go, you can go run all of that and still come back with a, we're not real sure what's going on. It happens all the time. Even with all of our knowledge, we don't know. We've now got the best telescope in the history of space telescopes, and we can see not just across our galaxy, but we can catch tens of thousands of galaxies clustered together across the universe. We can see with some great detail galaxies that are far distant to us, and if you ask scientists about it, they were like, oh yeah, this could have happened, but we don't know. We have no idea how that star got there, right? We have some theories, we have some ideas, we don't know. If you take a single photon of light, just a single particle, and you shoot it through a slit, like just pretend, like a gun, like you shoot it through a slit, and you know, it goes through that slit, and you could fire like 100 times, and you look on the other side, and you can see the pattern, like a target practice, and you see, okay, this is where all these little photons show up. And that kind of makes sense, right? You're shooting a single photon through a single slit in a piece of paper, or sort of single slit, and it goes through that slit, and you can tell. But you want to know what's really awesome? If you take that same single photon and you fire it at a piece of paper that has two slits, do you know which one it goes through? The answer is neither. It goes through both of them. A single photon of light goes through two slits simultaneously. And we know because we see the results, but you know what happens if you set up like an awesome camera to watch it happen? It stops doing it. You know why it does that? Because if you do, you could make a lot of money. Nobody knows how that happens. We've got all this amazing technology at our fingertips, and we still don't know how our universe works. So ultimately, what he's saying is, we're just going to have to trust that God is in control. Yeah, I know, it's beautiful. If anybody thinks that's your baby, you need to be talking to Google Images, because they have got it up there towards the top. I don't know how beautiful babies get made into beautiful babies. I don't know how stars get into distant galaxies. I don't know how photons of light go through two places at the same time. I don't understand any of that. I just have to trust that God made this universe and that he's the one who's in charge. And that's what the writer is saying. This universe is full of risk, but you know who knows this universe is full of risk? God, because he made it. So why does God act in our lives in this mysterious way? I don't know. You know, why does God take away something that I'm really hoping to keep? I don't know. Why does God give me something that I never wanted in the first place? I don't know. Why do I ask for prayers? Why do I pray prayers that I think are perfectly in line with the will of God and they seem to go unanswered? I don't know. Why do I have this dream that I believe God has sent me and this is a good thing for my life or for the life of my family or for the life of my community, and it just keeps butting my head against a brick wall? Why does that happen, God? I don't know. What about the mystery of our own salvation? What made Jesus willing to come and suffer and die for human beings that are so far beneath him? Why would he do that? Why would he bear our guilt and our shame on the cross? I don't know. And if he did, why would his death, a half a world away and thousands of years ago, why should that death save me here and now? I've got theories, but I don't really know. Why should that one resurrection give me hope for a resurrection? You know, why did God choose you and me? Out of all the people in the world, why did God choose you and me to hear the message of Jesus and give us the grace and the Spirit of God to believe on that message and be saved? I don't know. How did the Holy Spirit enable in me a broken, sinful, contrary human being? How did the Holy Spirit enable in me to receive the Word of God? I don't know. Ultimately, we have to admit that we don't know the work of God, the maker of everything. And that's okay. That's okay. This morning, we're really fortunate we've got this little Thanksgiving break, and I was glad to have my kids home from college, and some of you got a few days off work, and that's great. But tomorrow, mostly, stuff kind of goes back to normal, and if you have a job, you'll go back to your job, and if you go to school, you'll go back to school, and all that kind of things get back into normal, and you're going to go back into a world that's mostly the same as you left it, a few things different, but largely you'll pick up where you left off. And embedded in that life are going to be these risks. And the easy thing to do, the cautious thing to do, and what we tell ourselves the smart thing to do is just to stay out of that, to not get involved, to keep our hands off. But what the writer of Ecclesiastes, and I believe the story of Scripture, encourages us to do is to get our hands dirty in God's world. Who knows? Maybe God will use your small action to do something great. So if we can pray for you, encourage you, lift you up, and bring you into the family of God, to put on Jesus Christ in the waters of baptism, have your sins washed away, and rise to a new life in the kingdom. If you have any needs this morning, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?